Welcome back to another episode of the Devil's Party.
Excellent.
Canterbury Tales continues.
The Canterbury Tales, yes. Or indeed the prologue.
The prologue to it.
Yes. So, I believe we're up to the last group, the last stretch. Beginning about line 544, there was also a rave and a miller, a somnour and a pardoner, also a municipal and myself. There were no more. So there's a reeve is a kind of estate manager.
Okay.
Of various kinds, often to do with ecclesiastical estates, because of course the church owned most of the land in England.
Okay.
Church announced decrees. I mean, even now, slight detour, but even now you can apparently travel the whole length of Britain without leaving land owned by Trinity College Cambridge. Trinity is very well off.
Huh.
Mm.
Hmm.
My own college is less so. Pembroke hasn't got that much.
Oh. My brief time there was at Selwyn.
Selwyn.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Selwyn's very new though. It's Victorian.
There you go.
So.
Pretty. I mean, they're all pretty.
But the point is, I mean, with Pembroke, and I won't
spend
long
on
this, but it's kind of interesting. It was founded in 1348. And...
Was it the year of the plague?
No, that's... Oh.
1348?
God, you're right.
I'm getting there.
So it was.
The man doubts me.
No. Wow. Yeah, right, it was. How interesting.
Hmm.
But it was founded by a woman whose husband just died.
And had a lot of money.
Marie de Valence, her name was, Countess of Pembroke. Yeah, lots of money. Yeah, lots of money.
Hmm.
But in fact... Somewhere in the 14th century, somebody left a plot of land, which is now Trafalgar Square. Though I don't think they still own part of Trafalgar Square, I think, you know, over the years.
Wow.
Anyway, so the reeve would be looking after ecclesiastical land, as I say, mainly.
And this is, well, yeah, this is very much before
monastery.
The dissolution, so yes.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, monasteries were hugely wealthy institutions at this particular time.
Mm.
Because, as we've discussed this whole thing, this is an insurance policy. You're old and you're rich and you've probably got your money by ways that are not entirely above board.
Mm.
And death is staring in the face and demons were coming to get you. So, of course, you give land to the church.
Yeah.
I think there's actually an episode in Blackadder, in the first Blackadder, where... Somebody does that. Some dying woman wants to leave his land to the church. That's when Blackadder is made Archbishop of Canterbury.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah.
They're quite erudite, those things. They know
what
they're talking about. A summoner is somebody who summons people to ecclesiastical courts.
What?
Well, for general immorality. So not illegality, not breaking the law as much. So much as, you know, a bit of hanky-panky, adultery.
Imagine having this job. Like, you'd just be a professional tattletale.
Well, yeah, exactly. But think of the opportunities.
Ah, for bribes.
For bribes,
okay.
Yes.
I see a pattern emerging. How does the miller fit in?
Well, millers were notoriously corrupt because you were never quite certain. You see...
What you were getting in your flour.
Oh, well, no, not that.
Oh.
No. You're not the consumer here.
Okay.
You are the person with the corn to be ground.
Okay.
But how much of the flour you get back is from your corn? How much are you keeping on the side?
Okay.
So millers were notorious for... Well, I mean, it's because the job offers that possibility.
Yes.
It's not obviously open and above board. You can't scrutinise every part of the process.
Right, okay.
No. Whereas the ploughman, you know, the ploughman ploughs the land. He can't cheat anybody. So in a sense, he has a kind of natural moral superiority.
Okay. And so jobs that are open to suspicion.
Yeah, that's right. Corruption. And, you know, as we know, if people can make a bob on the side, they kind of will do.
And often have to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is why... This is why the Russian army is shit. Because it's riddled with corruption.
Ah.
So that all the money supposed to be going to uniforms and ammunition and so on is siphoned off at various levels.
Ah.
And they end up with crap. It doesn't work. So, it's an age-old problem. A monciple is another opportunity for a fiddle. A monciple is, in a secular institution, he's a person who buys provisions.
Ah.
So, again, you know, twixt cup and lip, there's many a slip.
Yeah.
Mm. So, he's with a rather shady crowd here. Or potentially shady. I mean, you could have honest millers, but then if everybody thinks you're screwing everybody anyway, why not do it?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Why be an honest miller? What's the payoff?
Yeah.
Because you can always repent on your deathbed. Sorry, God, didn't mean to swindle all those people.
But doesn't it have to be a sincere act of grace?
Well, it does. But the point is, most people aren't theologically very sophisticated.
Okay.
So no, your miller will probably end up in hell anyway.
But he thinks
all he has to do
right.
is say,
gotcha.
Yeah, because God will be deceived, you know. God. And of course, God is not deceived.
Mm.
Mm. He peers into your bosom.
I wish he wouldn't.
Yes, exactly.
Curtains closed.
Yeah. So in Dante's hell, he'd be there under theft, I suppose. Or actually under fraud, I suppose, because in a sense, a miller who doesn't give
fraud.
You all... Yeah, it's really fraud, isn't it?
And even... Oh, no, not
so that's the eighth. That's the eighth circle of hell.
Hmm.
Not a good place to be. So, the miller was a stout carl for the Norris. Full big he was of brown and eck of poorness. So, a stout carl. A carl is a rather sort of dismissive term for a kind
bloke.
Of... A bloke. A bogan, oaf, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Probably not very bright, but...
Being good at doing the...
Yes.
Milling.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Joe Sixpack.
Joe Sixpack. Big of brawn and bone, so he's big boned. That proved well, for over all he come, and wrestling he will have all by the ram. So whenever he wrestled at fairs and things, he would always win, because he's just so big and beefy.
But like a ram, just kind of throwing everything into it rather than
logic
or, you know.
Oh, but it's
he's
pride.
Not a careful fighter.
Oh, no.
He's just big.
Yes, that's right. He's just big.
Yep.
He overpowers. He could have gone into professional wrestling, I suppose, in the 20th century, but didn't exist in this period.
Jiu-jitsu.
Another opportunity, of course, for corruption.
Mm.
He was short-shouldered, broad, a thick knar. That word knar meaning a sort of, again, a kind of oaf. There's lots of words.
Wow,
for this,
really. He's really laying it on.
Well, he is, yes. Short-shouldered, broad, so we get the picture. There was no door he would not have of her. So there wasn't a door that he couldn't lift off its hinges. Okay. Why would you want to do that? Well, I suppose to demonstrate your strength. But of course it's also, you know, a way of going where you shouldn't.
Okay.
Or break it at a running with his head. So he could run at the door like that with his head down and break the door because his head is so thick and...
Right.
He's so muscly.
What a nice portrait choice.
Well, it is, isn't
like he doesn't clearly picked on at school. Poor Jeff.
But you see, Jeff is very impressed by this.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey rather.
Jeff's impressed. Yes. Yeah. Wow, he's saying, look at that. He can break doors with his head, which I think is just wonderful.
I mean, did he see it in practice? Was this guy bragging about it? Yeah. Is he assuming?
And you don't do too much of that, you know. Your brains will turn to porridge, as with football players.
Yes.
you know the Darwin Awards?
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Well, there's a famous one of a lawyer who has his penthouse suite way up high, and he's very proud of his glass windows. Oh. So he runs at it with his head to show how tough the glass is, breaks it, shoots straight through, and falls.
Didn't need his offspring.
No, that's right. On the top of his nose, he had a wart. So on the top of his nose, he's got a wart. and therein stood a tuft of hairs, red as the bristles of a sow's ears. So a tuft of hairs, red as the bristles on a sow's ass.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. He's not pulling punches.
Well, no. Medieval writers recognised different styles, appropriate different genres.
Yes.
So there's a tragic style, and a kind of heroic style, and a romance style. And there's also a Fabliau style.
Thank you. Okay, yeah. Yep.
And this is what he's writing in here. So.
And he's moved, hasn't he? Like he
oh, well...
Not all of it's been Fabliau, has it?
Oh, no. Chaucer the poet is, of course, very flexible, like Dante.
Yeah, and Spenser. You know? Spenser moves into so many different styles.
Yeah. What's interesting, if you compare that with your average 18th century poet, now I love 18th century poetry.
They do one.
Yeah, but they tended to continue in the same vein.
Yeah.
I mean, Pope is slightly different. Pope actually does have a bit more kind of mastery of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Gray or somebody, lovely stuff. I love it. But it's...
One. One stuff.
One stuff. That's right. A sword and buckler had he be a seeder. He's got a sword and buckler, a shield. His mouth as great was as a great fornice. That's a wonderful image, isn't it? His mouth is as big as a huge furnace.
It's almost satanic now.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
The point is, he's totally mindless of salvation. And therefore he's going to hell. And you got a glimpse of that. You get these occasional glimpses of damned souls in
real life.
Yeah, Chaucer.
Yeah.
Remember the monk with his eyes that glittered,
oh,
said,
yeah,
like stars of a frosty night.
Now,
a terrible coldness.
Purgatory was a thing at this point, yes.
Oh, God, yes.
They got Augustine. Who came up with purgatory?
No. No, purgatory's a bit later. Purgatory really pops up in something like the 11th century.
Okay.
I hesitate to put it like this, but should we say it's a form of social control?
I would agree.
Yeah. So if all you've got is hell and heaven.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to be sort of, to get into heaven, you have to be clean.
Pretty on. Yeah.
Yeah.
But purgatory is like, there's hope, even if you're a bit of a mess.
Well, that's right. We can offer you something. We can do a deal with the mafia.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if you're almost certain to go to hell anyway, well, you might as well carry on fornicating and...
Yeah.
And
who or what...
Well, priests control the way out of all that, because they have the keys to heaven and hell.
So it was their... reading of the Bible, which obviously then...
Oh, I see. Yeah, purgatory has no biblical...
Nothing in the Bible.
This is why the Protestants chucked it out.
Yes. I've got from there on. I'm like, where did it come in, though?
It came in about the 10th century, 11th century. And it's a way of... You see, the important sacrament is sacrament of penance.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where the priest has the control. The priest can grant you absolution or not grant you absolution.
Mm-hmm.
He can set a penance, you know, and you do that, and then you get your... And so, you've got confession.
Mm.
But confession needs a little more precision than I was terribly naughty last Tuesday. You know, that's not going to cut it. Because you can't move on from there or be analytic or anything. So you've got the development of the whole idea of the originally 8 deadly sins, which Gregory reduced to 7 deadly sins.
Which was the 7th?
Well, accedia.
Okay.
Accedia is a kind of spiritual sloth, which is actually much more important than physical sloth.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Because, of course, it got kind of mashed together, but it doesn't make a lot of sense because, you know, the chap who lies around smoking pot till noon is guilty of sloth.
Yes, but the banker who doesn't stop to spend time with his family or anything and is working 4 jobs at once is also guilty.
He's also guilty of sloth accedia, yeah, because he doesn't care about his soul.
Mm.
He's not giving any cure.
Not going to church.
Not going to church, not saying his prayers, not crucially coming to the priest to confess.
Yeah.
Which is because you couldn't take the Eucharist. And you couldn't enter heaven without the Eucharist, ultimately. And you couldn't get the Eucharist without... being confessed and shriven,
mm-hmm.
shriven raining. That's
sorry.
Why in Hamlet there's so much fuss
shriving.
About. Yeah, shriving. No shriving time allowed.
Okay.
Because no, if someone's not shriven, then they're going to hell.
So it was a communal effort from all of the priests to bring up this kind of middle ground purgatory.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is, and this will be important when we come to the pardoner, but you might as well have it now.
Sorry.
Yes. Basically, sin is an act against God, but it's also a turning to the world. Your sin, insofar as the turning to the world, can be pardoned. That is to say, the penalty associated with it can be alleviated or removed altogether by a kind of transmuted penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you
go
know,
to purgatory in, for 20,000 years.
Well,
of
it's purgatory. Yeah, purgatory is the main option. So purgatory will purge off the, you know, when you die, you've still got this bill of sins that you haven't paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Purgatory is the paying for it. But if you were rich enough, you could pay part of the bill in money, or you could hire lots of priests to. You know, the sad and solemn priests still sing for Richard's souls, their chantries. So you could, and this is one of the abuses, of course, because it got really bad in the early 16th century because of building St. Peter's, fantastically expensive. And this is one of the
indulgences
that you know, drove Luther and gave him a...
Yes.
So it's not essential to Catholicism, it was a good dodge, basically.
Okay.
So when we come to the pardoner is somebody who sells pardons which alleviate some of the actual physical penalty of sin.
Okay.
But there's a totally different thing about forgiveness, which is dealing with the sin as it relates to God, and only Christ can forgive sins. The priest can't forgive sins. The priest can only absolve you from the penalty.
Okay, all right. Yes, I've been reading this History of Christianity,
a
1,000-page monster,
and
100-page from the end, but I was thinking last night, they never did explain where purgatory comes from.
Oh, well, that's right. Well, so, it's just a kind of, you know, because if you send everybody to hell, you've got no control over anything. It's like you know, in the late 18th century, where virtually anything you did against the law would result in a hanging.
Yeah.
And of course it didn't, because juries wouldn't convict people for stealing a handkerchief because they knew
it was silly.
Yeah. And immoral to hang people for a 5-shilling theft. So you got off scot-free a lot of the time, or you were sent to Australia.
Good place to be.
Good place to
Lovely
be.
Lovely weather.
Yeah. Well, generally.
Half the year.
Half the year. That's right.
Okay. All right. And then we're watching Wolf Hall as well, so...
Oh, right.
Have you seen Wolf Hall already?
I have seen Wolf Hall, yeah. It's fun.
It's fun, yes. Mm. I'm just filling in Nick's education slowly. But I didn't realise Thomas More was basically martyred. I missed...
Really?
Well, yeah, because he becomes a saint later. Basically martyred.
He does become a saint. He was also a bit of a shit.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But the Catholic Church were like, woo, for a long time.
Oh,
that,
yeah. Well, partly because...
Despite.
But it's politics, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the tussle between Henry and the Pope.
Yes.
And Henry not getting his divorce purely because Henry's wife, Catherine, was the niece of the Emperor.
Yes.
You know, it's all politics.
Yes. So get another one and then behead her. Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. I've taken us way off track, but I think it's all relevant.
No, it's relevant. It's relevant.
While we're here and we're off track... Mary Queen of Scots, you always say she has a better claim. She had a better claim to the throne than Elizabeth I. Can you remind me of what that is?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a better claim.
Or an equally...
It's a vastly better claim in Catholic eyes.
Ah.
Because since they didn't recognise Henry's divorce...
And the Act of Succession.
Then she was a bastard.
That's why the Act of Succession is so important.
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
So, Mary's a legitimate heir, and Elizabeth isn't in Catholic eyes. But obviously, that didn't apply to Protestants. But that's most of Europe, of course, it's Catholic. So.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if they were secretly still even if they were Protestant, they might secretly still be Catholic.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And they were called church papists. They would go along to church with fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, you would.
Yeah, you would. Exactly.
Okay, that has filled that gap.
Did I mention very briefly, since we're down this rabbit hole, and it's all relevant, a bomb, 1940 or something, it was, you know, Hitler's, what were called Baedeker raids.
Okay.
Raids on famous tourist towns in England, basically against, you know, to reduce morale.
Ah.
The kind of terrorism. And Exeter Cathedral, it was only hit, I think, by one bomb. And it was actually very interesting, because what it did was it revealed this hidden cache.
Oh, yes.
Yes, of Catholic paraphernalia owned by a Protestant archdeacon of the cathedral.
Yeah, okay. Card-carrying
papers. His beads, all his stuff.
Yeah. The Wolf Hall has a scene where Cromwell, you know, his underlings or whatever, bringing him stuff in from the dissolution. It's like, oh, well, what is it this time? Oh, no, he says, guess what's in this one?
Yeah.
Oh, God, what is it? And it's like the knuckle bones of St. Anthony kind of thing. He's like, man must have had 500 fingers.
That's right.
Fantastic.
That's right. Well, as we know, Christ had 16 penises. Because,
yeah. Mm. Good for him.
Good.
Apparently, echidnas have some set up like that.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, you never know.
You never know.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah.
Right, that fills in gaps.
Oh, good. But that's why in Spencer, a character like Archimago, who is a kind of secret Catholic, is so sinister, you know, with his whispering and his beads.
It would have been sinister, because you wouldn't know who you can trust.
Exactly, they're hidden away in the corners, you know.
Yeah.
Could be a Jesuit.
You always, well, yeah, and you always think of, like, you know, the communism, sort of like that.
Yeah,
in
it's Berlin a bit like
and
that.
So on, and the Stasi, but you don't think of that as happening in England, but...
Oh,
but
yeah.
It did.
Very much so.
Yeah, okay.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. Back to our furnace.
Yes.
Mouth.
Furnace mouth.
Miller.
He was a jangler and a Goliardice. So he was a joker and a japer and a merry. Well, what he thought were merry japes. You can imagine the kind of thing.
Class clown.
Yeah.
Stuff, yep.
That kind of thing. And basically, you know, talking too much and too loudly. And that was most of sin and harlotries. So he talked about a lot of stuff, and it was mainly sin. And I suppose we can imagine, you know, drink, sex, whatever. And harlotries. Ribaldry.
Mm.
Can we use the word ribaldry?
Joyous jolliment.
Joyous
times 50.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, orgies. Yeah. Let's call them what they are.
Well, yeah. But, you know, it's the kind of talk you'd hear in the pub on a Saturday night.
Okay.
After a few.
Yes.
Well, could he steal and corn and tolentheus? Yet he had a thumb of gold, buddy. So he could steal corn and count it three times. So this is his toll payment, and he would try it with his thumb. He had a thumb of gold, buddy, because, you know, he's taking his tolls and his taxes and so on, and he puts his thumb in the scale.
Oh, okay.
So it appears to be more corn than there is, and he demands a higher tax on it. Dodges of this kind, you know.
Right. And is part of this the idea that morally they haven't earned that wealth? Like, obviously, they haven't earned the wealth, but, like, their soul...
Well, yeah.
And the way people were thinking about money at this time and
but
so
no,
on.
No, that's exactly right. And then, you know, this goes right back to Dante's Hell again.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's people's possessions that they have, you know, and the ploughman has worked to create it, so
exactly.
It's an extension of himself. So
yeah.
He's corrupting his body or an extension of his body.
But
yeah.
The miller who hangs on to part of your flour, or the corrupt official who
makes
more
money
than the taxes required and then keeps the difference, they're not producing anything. They're not...
Yes.
They're feeding off you parasitically.
It's like usury, yeah.
It's like usury.
So they'd be in that part of hell, maybe. Fraud. But also usury.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because that kind of physical fraud doesn't really find a place in Dante's hell. It's much more personal.
You're right.
you maybe can't do something about the corrupt official who's sticking his thumb in the way because you don't have the power to do it. But you can see you're being swindled.
Mm.
As opposed to the confidence trickster, who for Dante is much more sinister because...
That's fair. Okay. Yeah, so it's twofold. So
it's more kind of theft, yeah.
Yep.
A white coat, a white coat and a blue hood were there. A bag of people well could he blow and soothe. Therewithal he brought a suit of dun. So he had a white coat and a blue hood. I'm not sure if that means anything in particular. It's more of this randomness, isn't it? Bagpipe, however, bagpipes have a sort of passing resemblance to the male gonads.
Oh, for God's
sake. Well, there's a big sack and yeah. A protruding thingy.
I thought you were just going to tell me you're Scottish and therefore...
Oh. I don't think... so we'll get pushback here, but I'm not sure that bagpipes are...
Oh!
Scots claim them, yeah, but they exist elsewhere, ancient Greece and so on, and... Yeah, so I'm not sure that they really are.
Okay, never mind.
Not that you'd want to claim them anyway.
Oh, you don't like them?
Oh!
I quite like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, in small doses, in a sort of,
I wouldn't put it on to listen to on my run, but, You come out of the train station in Edinburgh and they're all lined up and it's like, well, this could be a lot worse. It could be old mate who stands out the front of the Arts Centre in Melbourne with his microphone, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen him? No. Singing his awful, awful songs?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
But I have. There's a Chinese man with a sort of string...
Oh, yes.
Who actually is rather good. He's...
Yeah, it's fine.
These rather nice wailing melodies.
I prefer the bagpipes. Yeah. Okay, bagpipes. Not necessarily Scottish. Sorry, Scotland.
No. Tormented cat. But I think that's what it is. It's a rather gross male...
Yeah, joke.
Well, joke, I suppose, yes. And then with all he brought a suit of dun, so he's kind of accompanying their departure from London. And of course, in those days, London was much smaller.
Mm.
So that you'd be in the countryside almost immediately. It didn't have, a vast sprawl of suburbs.
Mm. It'd be like Bendigo or something now.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
It didn't hit 100,000 until, about late Middle Ages. So, in fact, it's probably about 100,000 people. So that's...
Good golly.
Won't that be in Australian terms?
I mean, yeah, okay. Hobart, Geelong, Townsville, Cairns.
Okay.
Darwin. That kind of helps.
Okay.
Think of it as the size of Darwin or Geelong. Yeah.
But still, if you're anybody who's anybody,
you know them.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's it. Nick could get over Cromwell and I'm like, it's not that big.
No, exactly.
It kind of makes sense.
Exactly. So... By Shakespeare's day, it's 200,000 to 250,000.
And that was the biggest city in Europe or in the world?
Not quite yet, no.
Constantinople.
It overtakes Paris in, I think, the 17th century.
Okay.
And then it just grows out of all proportion. And, the middle of the 19th century, it's
huge.
Three times the size of Paris, which is the next biggest city. It's 7-8 million people. It's just crazy.
Hmm. Cool. Okay. Interesting.
So, a gentle municipal was said of a temple. So he's a municipal, as I said, a provisioner, somebody who buys provisions for the institution. A temple is one of the sort of schools of law. In nowadays barristers have to have chambers. Well, they would have had those in a temple.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, it was called a temple. It was a secular institution, obviously, an illegal institution.
Yep, okay.
I don't know if there was a connection with the Templars. There may well have been. I don't know. Possibly.
Don't know.
No.
Yeah,
People are fascinated by the Templars, of course.
Well, this book just completely exploded everything for me. It's just like, they were just a group that sprang up.
Well, that's right. And then were...
They weren't that big of a deal.
Cash beaten down, yeah. Well, they were kind of like in the... one of the first...
A secular...
The first multinational corporation, I suppose you could say.
Yeah.
Anyway, of which a chateau is mich to take example. So, buyers of every kind might take again his example. Again, he's the best of his kind, and Jeff is very impressed by him. For to be wise in being of Vitaya, take an example of how to be wise in buying of Vitaya, meaning food.
Provisions.
Oh, yes, provisions. Yeah. Yep. Algati whited so in his chat that he was high before and good start. So whether he paid or took by tally, by part payment, he was always so cunning that he was always ahead of whoever he was buying from and in good start. And that's praise. Yeah, he's really astute. But of course, ideally, you shouldn't be ahead of the person you're dealing with.
No, you should be working with them and
on the same level.
Relationship. Yeah.
So if you're ahead of them, you're kind of deceiving them. And
it's kind of what Woolworths and Coles are doing now.
I suppose so. Yeah, well, exactly. They've always done.
Well, yes, but bad, really bad at the moment, having these like billion-dollar profits and
I know,
deodorants $10 or something stupid.
Yeah.
A similar thing.
And then they have these ridiculous little sort of, are you collecting the farm animals? No. Fuck your farm animals.
Yeah. Bring down the price of broccoli.
That's right. Exactly. Well, the trouble is, and for those who don't live in Australia, they are many.
Which is the majority of our listeners,
yes,
by the way.
Exactly. Australia has essentially a duopoly.
Yeah.
Only two big supermarkets. There are one or two little ones like Aldi.
Yeah.
But Aldi isn't as convenient for many people because it's, you know, you can't chuck a brick without hitting a Woolies or a Coles.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's as bad as a monopoly, really.
Yeah.
A cartel. Ooh, is that gnat of God a full fire grasser? That such a lewd man as wit shall pass to the wisdom of an hip of learned men. So do you think he's saying it's a great grace of God that an unlearned man's wit will outpace the wisdom of a whole heap of learned men, such as you would find in a temple of law. You know.
This is Jeff.
Oh, Jeff is impressed. Or
sounds
actually like irony, but then coming from Jeff, it can't be. So maybe he's just.
Well, again, it's Jeffrey coming through Jeff.
Yeah.
The irony. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a clash of voices in a sense. Of maestros had he more than 3 or 10 that were of law expert and curious. So these are the people in the temple, the masters. 30, more than 30 that were expert in the law and curious. They looked into, they were skillful, they were careful. In which there were 12 in that house, worthy to be stewards of rent and land, of any lord that is in England, to make him live by his proper good, in honour debtorless, but if you would. So any of them could have been stewards to any lord in England to make him live according to his income. And of course, typically lords
did not
do that.
No, they borrowed. And
they borrowed partly because, of course, and this is true right through Elizabethan aristocracy, there was a terrible necessity to be in not just finery but new finery all the time.
Constantly.
My dear, I couldn't possibly wear last year's suit.
Yeah.
And that gets you into debt. And all of those Elizabethan aristocrats, like Raleigh and Essex and so on, they were all hocked up to the eyeballs and beyond. But there's an aristocratic attitude which survives right into the 19th century. You know, you don't pay tradesmen. My dear, tradesmen, what are they, really? You know, they're just there for our convenience.
Ah, so you just didn't pay.
You didn't pay, no. And the tradesmen would carry on, I suppose, supplying in the hope that
you might.
Yes,
how bizarre.
There's a line in Pope's poem on the characters of women where he talks about one aristocratic lady who paid a tradesman once to make him stare. She does it just to
wow.
Yes.
So why do they do the work and why don't they?
Well, I mean, they aristocrats weren't their only customers, I suppose, and and I suppose there's some cachet in being supplier to
Lord so and so.
Yes, and Lady Fauntleroy.
Oh my god!
But yeah, the attitude that we don't pay tradesman, my dear. So I was right into the 19th century. Maybe.
It's kind of, I think, still around now.
I may, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you say it. Okay. Interesting.
Yes. English snobbery, which is a thing that's a constant in English culture for centuries. who could remain without debt in honour, except unless you were mad, but if you were would. But of course that's a little joke because they virtually all were.
Mm. I mean, yeah, they used lead a little bit too.
Or live as scarcely as him did this desire, or live as, you know, frugally as he might desire. Dable for the help and all sheer, nanny cast at mich to follow hap. And yet this multipler set here at a camp. So despite, you know, all their cleverness, they could do all this. This multiple was just way ahead of them. Tipped the cap of all of them. Is that the end?
Yes, that's the multiple.
Okay.
And then we have the rev.
So again, ironic praise.
Choleric man.
Choleric, yes. And of course, we still use the word, but then it had a more precise meaning, as we know. And we haven't talked about the humans, have we? But
I think we will have a long... Yeah, no, we've talked about the humans.
Sure.
I've edited them. Yes.
Okay. So, this means having too much yellow bile.
Mm.
And that's... Yes. Sounds delightful. And yellow bile makes you angry and irritable and...
Irascible.
Mm. Yes. Exactly so. And also, you know, the humours... We should do a session on them at some point. I mean, I don't think we've done it for the Chaucer, have we? But anyway.
I see what you mean. Yes. I guess people who've listened to all of... Like, we can't assume everyone's listened to all of Spencer. Okay,
no.
Yeah, carry on.
Well, I wouldn't go into it just now, because we could actually do a whole separate topic on that. But
okay.
But the point is that it was your complexion. It was called your complexion.
Mm.
And it was both physiological and psychological.
Mm-hmm.
And so in fact it was actually quite interesting because they understood a connection between the two, which is, you know, to some extent
ahead of its time.
Yeah, in a way, that's right. So that if you're choleric, you're likely to be, yes, thin and, you know, pinched and so on. Whereas if you're phlegmatic, too much phlegm, sounds horrible, you're all
spendthrift.
No,
I thought that's where you're going. No.
No. I mean, mentally you're apathetic and lazy and dull-witted. And physically you're flabby and listless and you lack muscle tone. And, you
slovenly.
Know, yeah, exactly. All that.
Yeah, okay.
All that stuff.
Lugubrious. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So... The raver was a slender, choleric man. And again, that's probably not a good sign. He's probably, you know, out.
But Jeff's going, oh, you're so thin.
That's right, my dear. You must give me the name of your dietitian. His beard was shaved as near as ever he can. So he's... it's interesting,
this man
isn't
doesn't
it?
Waste a cent, sort of thing.
Well, yes, he's, but also there's a sense of a kind of, dare I say, anal hoarding.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Everything is
controlled
neat and controlled.
And, yeah.
And, yeah, like a sort of person who's born to be a bureaucrat,
yes,
who wants to control other people and hold the purse strings and dole out the money and pennies.
Yeah, gets off on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes, the idea is it's ultimately a form of misdirected libido.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Mm.
And this is a sliding scale, isn't it? People...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's quite a sophisticated system, actually.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a simple, you know...
Maybe we do a Peter Explains the Humours.
Yeah, we'll do one, but it'll be a hell of a rabbit hole if we...
Yeah, no, yeah. I think, and then people can dive in and out. I reckon that would get...
Yeah. Let's do that.
Maybe we do that before Faustus.
Because it's actually, yeah, because it is actually quite a, as I say, sophisticated, and it held sway.
from... It still does, in its own way.
Well, the word, we still use the word.
Yeah.
So right from the, you know, late antiquity to the 17th, 18th century.
Because it's Galen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, his top was docked like a priest before him. So his hair's cut short, like a priest. Full longer were his legs and full lane, like a staff that was no calificene. So again, he's thin, his legs are long and lean, and he's got no calves, no flesh around them. Well, could he keep a gerne and a bin? These are storage devices, of course, you know, for corn and so on. There was no auditor, could only win. Again, he's very sharp, very canny. No auditor, nobody auditing the books, could get one past him. Well, wist ye be the drocht and be the rhine, the yielding of his sed and of his grind. So he's got countryman's knowledge too. He knows by drought and rain how much his seed is going to yield. His lord of the ship, his net are cattle, his diary, his dairy, his swine, his horse, his stone, and his store and his poultry was wholly in this raver's governing. He knows every grain of corn, he's got his eye on everything. So in a way, he'd be an excellent at his job, provided he has the will to be a good servant.
Yeah. Not morally questionable here.
You run into this problem, don't you? That
you never know.
Well, yeah, but it's more of a problem than that. It's a problem, the way in which, if you like, social duties and so on might conflict with Christian principles.
Right.
So he's unlikely, for example, to be giving out charitable donations to people knocking at the gate.
Okay, because he's trying to keep provisions sorted for Lord Dickhead who keeps buying new suits.
Exactly, he's an anal hoarder.
Yeah.
Even if he's doing by proxy. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So he won't be...
to keep his head, or, you know, to keep his job sort of thing, he has to be. Because he's trying to organise Lord...
Yeah.
You know, Buffhead.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But I think you're right to suggest that there's a sense that there's also a kind of gratification in this.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of transferred sexuality.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he almost enjoys not giving money to the poor and being able to save it and keep it. It's very complicated.
Oh, very complicated.
That's interesting psychological portrait. Oh,
absolutely. That's what's more wonderful about Chaucer. You expect, you know, simplified, flat characters, and you get this quite complicated.
So, I mean, they would have still had the four humours as they're understood. Like, there was no ironic understanding of them yet.
Oh, yeah.
So...
But I think someone like Chaucer wouldn't see them as a total and complete.
So he's making this complicated and looking at the different layers.
He's recognising complication, as Shakespeare did.
Yeah.
As Spencer did.
Yep. Psychological complexity.
Yeah.
But through this, so we start with choleric, and it's like, okay, and that's your entry level, and then we start going down these levels, and
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, the different ways in which these things can manifest themselves.
Mm.
Good and bad, attractive and unattractive.
Mm. No calves. Calves are in at the moment.
Are they?
Yep, get your calves. Everyone's working on their calves.
Okay. Sith that his lord was 20 years of age. So he's been looking after this stuff since his lord was 20 years old.
He's been in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. There could no man bring him in arrearage. Nobody could, should we say, to be in arrearage, to bring someone in arrearage, is to accuse them of being in arrears, of fiddling the books. So if you say of somebody, nobody could accuse him successfully of fiddling the books, Do you mean he wasn't fiddling the books?
Or that you couldn't accuse him successfully?
He was so clever a fiddler.
Yeah,
that, you that nobody could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing with this job is everyone would assume, everyone would think that that's what you were doing one way or another.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I mean, Jeff, again, is impressed and possibly takes that as evidence that he's an honest man, because nobody can prove
Diogenes.
But again, because he's an unreliable narrator, one of the first in literature, we look through or past his words and see that, in fact...
Oh, this is fun.
It's great fun. Huge fun.
Christmas was on a Monday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was sat around going, I'm going to be with Peter all the way. You know? I was pissed off.
Then nas bailiff, na hirde, nor other heen, that heen knew the sleicht in his covine. So there wasn't a bailiff, again, who looks after accounts and things and collects rents and so on, or a herder, a swine herder, shepherd, or other. A heener is a hired man, I suppose. You know, okay. On the farm, on the estate, that he didn't know his slecht and his covin, his cunning, his tricks, his what he was up to, his shtick, if I may use that word.
Yeah, sure. Shtick.
In other words, he's got tabs on everyone.
Okay.
You know, he knows that Bill is doing a bit of a fiddle here and Fred is...
Yes.
On the take.
He's
there.
The true lord of the estate.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a kind. Yes, exactly. It's a kind of surrogate ownership, which gives you as much more pleasure. I mean, the lord, he just lies around drinking wine, maybe, and fornicating.
Good for him. But yeah, no.
But
they have power in this weird secondary sense.
Yes,
they have the true.
He truly possesses.
Yeah.
And gets that pleasure of possession, which of course is of course ultimately diabolic.
Yeah.
You know. You're not supposed to enjoy possessing things in Christianity.
Yeah.
You're supposed to divest yourself of the love of created beings and things.
Mm. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So it's rather a nice touch, isn't it?
It's clever.
He's the true owner in the sense that he experiences and delights in ownership in the way that... person who technically owns it all can't. Pope's Epistle to Burlington?
Yes, we looked at the whole thing.
Well, if you remember, Burlington is partly about that, you know. He begins...
It's
strange the miser should his cares employ to gain those riches he can ne'er enjoy. Is it less strange the prodigal should waste his wealth to purchase what he ne'er can taste? He can't feel it, he can't understand it, he can't grasp it, he can't own it, he can't possess it, he can't inhabit it. He just pays the money so people know he's a lord, you know.
Mm.
Oh, he's a lord, he's got pretty pictures on the walls.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But the person who bought the pictures knows and loves them, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Gatsby buying his library by the foot.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
There was a book retailer in Melbourne in the 90s who would sell books by the meter.
For rich people put on their shelves, yeah.
Yes, that's right. I'll have 2 meters of pink books, please.
It hurts.
I know.
So much.
I know. Horrible, most horrible. Again, that's in Pope.
Yeah.
You know, lo, some are vellum, but the rest is good, for all his lordship knows. But they are wood.
Yeah, God.
Oh, the great poets are there before anybody. Nowadays, you're not allowed to talk about great poets, of course. It's all just texts. Fuck that, I say.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
They were a dread of him as of the death. So.
Fearful.
Fearful, they were fearful of him.
He was in charge.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's almost running kind of mafia racket here, you know. So. They, because they're so fearful of him and how he might expose them, they will of course then, and it's not stated, but the logical thing is that of their illegal takings, a little bit will trickle his way.
Yeah.
And a complex web of corruption going on here.
Yeah.
And he works by fear. His warning was full fire upon an hearth. So his dwelling is really handsome, very nice dwelling, on the heath, open land. With grain at trays, Shadwood was his place.
That's interesting.
Leafy suburb, they say nowadays.
Well, I was thinking more Locus Amenus, but yes.
No, you're absolutely right. Locus Amenus is yes.
Oh, did I show you? I'll show you at the end. I found... We're on this walk at the peninsula, and the road splits just ahead of us. And to the left, it was all dark and dreary, and it turned out someone had built this amazing sort of cubby thing with... It was huge. Like, I went in it looking for hobbits sort of thing. And the other path was light and bright, and the sun was shining. I'm like, this is Spencerian. I'm taking a picture yes. of Peter. I'll show you in a second.
Wonderful. he could the better than his lord, perchance. So he could acquire stuff, whatever that means. But we nowadays use purchase to mean buy, don't we? But then it meant...
Acquire
in one way or another. Better than his lord, his rich lord. But, you know,
okay.
His rich lord has to spend money to get stuff. Whereas he can...
Not pay his tradesmen. Yeah, okay.
Full rich he was a storied privily. So he's, you know, he's got quite rich on all this. His lord will cut a pleasant soup tilly to yeave and lend him of his own good. So he's also good at manipulating the lord, who he's been, you know, looking after since he was 20. I don't know how old he's supposed to be now, but...
You'd be like a pseudo-father, you know.
Well, a slightly sinister relation of the...
wrong kind of priest.
Yes. Well, there's a tradition in literature which goes right back to ancient Greek comedy of the clever servant and the rather dim-witted master. And the clever servant...
Blackadder.
Baldric...
No. Blackadder himself. And then whoever George is always a dim-wit.
Oh.
You know?
Oh, you mean like the third one? Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. He's Prince Regent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And then Blackadder's
that's
the one doing everything.
That's a perfect example of relationship. But in the first Blackadder, sorry about this, folks, who haven't seen Blackadder.
Well, go and watch
but
Blackadder.
But you must go and watch Blackadder. It's brilliant. Baldric is actually quite cunning.
Yeah.
He has really cunning plans.
He becomes stupider.
He becomes stupid, yes. Well, that's right. But it pops up. I mean, Shakespeare's full of these.
Dogberry is the one who, you know, knows what's happened, if only anyone would listen to him.
Well, that's right. But also, you know, there's something faintly sinister. And I think it's best... its best manifestation is in Bertie Wooster and Jeeves. Now, Bertie's an idiot. He's an amiable idiot. But he pays Jeeves to be his valet. But Jeeves is really quite intelligent. Why is... You know, Jeeves could be a cabinet minister. Why don't you...
Yeah, okay.
Do you know...
I know the, like, the...
Oh, you should read
I haven't
them.
Actually... Oh, they're books. Wow. I thought they were an old film or something.
Oh, no.
No,
okay. No, don't worry about them. The films are nothing because there all you've got is plot.
Yeah.
But it's the writing of the Jeeves. It's the wonderful kind of crazy similes. Yes. For example, you know, he comes into a kitchen, it's all a bit of a mess, and he says there was a fish head on the floor looking at him as though it were demanding a written explanation and an apology. You know, it's kind of surreal.
I like it.
Makes me scream with laughter, those books.
Okay, all right.
More in your reading list.
So much.
But yeah, that's a classic example of the faintly sinister, clever servant with the foolish master.
And that's what this is.
That's what this is, yeah. And of course here the clip. I mean, Jeeves, you sort of think he probably has Bertie's... Except Jeeves is controlling Bertie all the time because he has this very strong sense of what a gentleman wears and doesn't wear.
It's like Alfred and Batman is another version.
Yeah,
but different.
Probably,
it's a riff on it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So Bertie's always trying to strike out. He wants to wear a white waistcoat, you know. And Jeeves isn't having that. So what Jeeves does is manage to solve some terrible tangle that Bertie gets himself into, and then his payoff is that he has to abandon the white waistcoat or whatever it was, the red tie or whatever sartorial abomination.
Yeah, I love it. Okay.
So it's a form of control.
Yeah.
Look, somebody should write a thesis.
More paternal in that case?
Sorry?
More paternal in that case?
Well...
Because it seems like a corruption of what your relationship should be with your priest. You know, your priest has your soul, you know, is responsible for your soul and your well-being or whatever, but this lord just has his... are we up to the Monsipla?
This is the Reeve.
Oh, the Reeve, sorry. He's doing it instead, and he has control of his soul on Earth.
Well, essentially,
know?
Yeah.
So it's another form of exedia.
That's right. Oh, yeah, very much so. Yes, the Lord that couldn't give a flying
toss.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly right. When you say paternalistic, you see, the whole point is there is this complexity. Somebody should write a thesis on Bertie Wooster and Jeeves. They probably have. But paternalism, is it about care or about control?
That's what I mean.
Or can care only proceed through control? You mustn't go out tonight.
Yeah.
Not wearing that skirt.
Yeah.
How to disentangle?
Well, that's it. That's parenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because it's control, right. But is it for their own good or is it for you? Or yeah.
I mean, when you get to Midsummer Night's Dream, where Aegeon wants to have his daughter killed because she won't marry... Yeah, we've probably gone beyond...
Same as Agamemnon, like...
Yeah, that's right.
Clytemnestra might have a point.
So he can subtly please his lord. He knows a way... He knows how to get around him. Get all sorts of goods and services from him, to yave and lend him of his own good, and ever thank, and yet a court and hood. So he's not only, he actually thanks him and gives him a coat and hood. Icing on the cake.
Interesting.
In youth he had a learned and good mister, was a well good richt. A carpenter, so he learned a good trade in his youth. He was a wright. You know, we have shipwrights, playwrights, people who make things.
Yes.
Because if you're a wright, you wreak something, and when you've wreaked it, you wrought it, like wrought iron.
Okay.
All these words are related, and they're all related to the word work, to work something. So. The wonders of etymology.
And we're back to the blacksmith and the link to hell and...
Yeah. That's right. So a playwright is seen as actually constructing a physical object almost.
Well,
just like a wheelwright
makes
a wheel. Yeah.
Whew.
I think sometimes students, I think it's spelt playwright. W-R-I-T.
Or R-I-G-H-T, I've seen.
Oh, really? Like copyright. This raver sat upon a full good stot that was all pommely gray and hicht a scot. And we learn the name of his horse.
That's nice.
a stot is a plain farm horse, but a kind of expensive. He's not showy, the Reeve.
Practical.
He's practical. Also, if a Reeve is a little too showy with his money, you begin to ask questions. Where did the Reeve get that kind of cash? So he's clever. That was all pommely gray and hicht a scot. Well, it's nice to know the name of his horse. A long surcoat of purse upon he had, and be a seed he bar a rusty blad. So he's got a long surcoat on of rich blue, and he's got a rusty blade by his side, which is interesting. I think a rusty blade, if you remember in Spencer, that's often a sign, isn't it, of a kind of melancholy or a kind of...
Oh, that's... Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind of doesn't entirely not go with this, if you like, because there's a kind of emotional deadness about him in the sense that he's He's this anal manipulator. He's focused on having and not being and so on. We don't hear he's got a jolly wife and six children.
Yeah. He's getting his rocks off that.
Yeah, but there's this kind of emotional deadness, I suppose.
Yeah.
Remember that despair is a rusty dagger in Spencer. Of Northfolk was this Reeve of which he tell, again, random stuff. Beseeded Toonmen Kleppen Balderswell. Northfolk, North people, which of course is now Norfolk. I've noticed a lot of Australians talk about Norfolk Island or something.
Norfolk Island?
Well, it's Norfolk, yes, it's Norfolk. But
oh, they pronounce it folk.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Oh, I apologise.
It's a...
Oof.
Yes. Beside a town called Ballswell, which again is a town that's there. Currently called Boardswell, which is curious because it suggests it's a well for boards. Tuckety was is a fair boot. So he's got his surcoat tucked into his bottom part, into his girdle, should we say. And definitely rode the hindrest of a route, and he's always riding at the back.
So that you can see what's going on?
Well, I suppose so, yes. He's got his eye on everything, yeah. Mm. And that's the best vantage point, isn't it? You're quite right. So a kind of rather sinister character. And again, Jeff doesn't really see that, obviously. But this kind of obsession to control, manipulate.
Mm.
A summoner was there with us in that place. So a summoner, as I said, somebody who summons you to ecclesiastical courts for general naughtiness.
I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent.
Well, there is none, because either you're breaking the law or you're not breaking the law.
Do we have the court of public opinion, though?
Well, another metaphor.
Well, I mean, JK's out. You know, a lot of people don't spend money on Harry Potter anymore.
I know. But we don't have formal sessions. Where
I think they'd like it. yeah, okay.
Well, it would be better than, somebody makes a... Doxed. Yeah, or somebody makes a kind of ill-advised joke and now life is ruined, you know.
Yeah.
Might as well have a court and a judge with a gavel.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, that's what it is.
What would the punishments be?
Well, for example, one punishment for adultery was you had to do a kind of, you had to wear a sort of a white surcoat and stand in the church porch for a few hours to be.
So everyone could see you?
Yeah.
And then it was like public shaming?
Yeah, public
which
shaming.
Which we know is so powerful in human psychology.
Yes,
yeah, okay.
That's right.
All right.
That's
right. So it was a way of social control. Okay.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So you wouldn't do stuff more because you were fearful of being given that punishment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's parallel to legal punishment. And I suppose you have to submit to the law. You probably didn't have to submit to this, but if you didn't submit to it, it'd be even more shaming, wouldn't it?
Would it?
Mm. Well, if everybody...
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, being in that society and, you know, people not coming to dinner because you didn't wear the right such and such, or, you know, that kind of ousting. Mm.
Well, the point is, if you do your pet, you wear your white clothes and you stand in the church porch, you've kind of wiped the slate clean. But if you avoid all that, then you're permanently...
I'm funny,
so you probably would want to comply, and people love to look down their noses at other people, you know.
But that's what I mean, even if you did your time in the churchyard, people would probably still look down their noses at you.
Well, no, because you know you'd be like a reformed criminal, I suppose.
Would have always known that you'd been a criminal.
Well,
it's just an interesting...
You're right.
So would that be as bad as the punishment? Like, you weren't ever put in prison or
no.
It was just like a social...
It's purely social shaming, you know.
Bizarre. Is this like the Society for Manners? What was it?
Oh, you mean...
Later, in the 18th century.
You don't mean Gordon Comstock?
I don't know if I do. The Society for the Reformation of Manners?
Yes, that's Gordon Comstock. Yeah. New York, late 19th century New York.
Oh, I'm thinking England, but yes, okay.
Well, I think it spread to England.
Oh, okay. Mm. Okay.
Huh. So there were rules like, you know, you mustn't walk, a man or woman shouldn't be abreast on a pavement or something.
Right.
But of course, you could break that rule all you like during, by that time.
Okay.
But yes, there were these unspoken rules.
Right. So this guy, if you got a letter from him.
Well, he'd come and knock on your door.
Oh, that's polite.
Yes.
Well, look, we heard that you were having it away with.
Exactly.
The butcher's son and the bushes the other night at the pub.
Exactly, exactly.
So we're going to need you to come and answer for it.
Come and answer, exactly.
And it would be those sorts of crimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. So, and the presiding person would be the archdeacon.
So the church still had so much power.
Well, it had power, but it's moral suasion rather than...
But they could manipulate that so easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, of course, one of the big tussles in English legal history in the medieval
period... Where does power lie?
Well, and in particular, what... do you do with clerics? Are clerics
what
to be tried?
What do you do? Yeah, okay.
And of course, this is why Henry II quarrelled with Thomas à Becket, who refused to give up on that point and insisted that clerics must be tried in ecclesiastical courts. Which is why...
almost certainly very corrupt. But yes, I see his point.
Which is why, of course, he got the chop on December the 27th, 1170.
1170. Okay.
Inside the Canterbury Cathedral.
Oh. Ooh.
Yes. You can still see the place where he was cut down. Mm. The top of his head was sliced off with a sword.
It's like you don't have that history in Australia.
No, you don't.
Like in England, you can't kick a football without hitting a site of, you know, historical significance. That's even right. If it was just like where the Romans discovered trout, I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. But of course, the importance of that is the saint. These people are coming 200 years later.
Exactly. Yeah.
To venerate.
Yes.
Mm. So yeah, so that's it. Ecclesiastical. Courts.
And that tussle is like,
oh,
who has earthly, who has, yeah, power?
Well, yes, it's the state to have all kind of legal power, powers of punishment, what's sometimes called a monopoly on violence.
Yeah.
Or is the church to look after its own? And it's a big question, you know. It's like a sort of subset of the question that runs right through Dante about emperor and pope. And
yes.
Who is the big banana?
Mm.
And of course, Dante's view of the matter is that, well...
it's a bit of both.
The Pope is the spiritual banana.
Yeah.
And the Emperor is the...
worldly.
The worldly banana.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah, but it's still both. Like, he recognises both the power, but you can't claim total control for the thing that you don't know. Like, this Pope can't have worldly power. Come on.
Well, no, yeah. but he was given it, and that was all the problem.
That was the problem.
Blasted Constantine.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. Okay.
He muddied the waters.
Yes.
So that's basically what it's about. That's why you've heard of neckverse. Well, neckverse was, if you could cite the opening of the Miserere.
Right.
Miserere me Deus, and so on. You could get off being hanged in a civil, in an ordinary court for a murder, say. Because you were establishing that you were a cleric, because only clerics knew Latin. And of course, everyone knew this was a dodge. But it was allowed. But you couldn't have it once. So, for example, Ben Jonson, say he would have been hanged for killing a man in a...
Oh, I didn't know this.
But of course, he knew Latin, so he said his neck verse. But...
I'm going to learn some neck verse, just in case.
But everyone, as I said, kind of knew it was kind of a dodge. So you only allowed it once. And what happened was you'll be branded on the thumb. So But Johnson was branded on the thumb, which meant that if he again murdered a man or killed a man in a duel or something, he couldn't again claim. It's called benefit of clergy. The phrase benefit of clergy?
What a bizarre...
Well, I know. Get off with the murder.
Just because you're educated, you know?
Well, that's right. Got a bit of Latin. The value of Latin. This is how you teach... get students to learn Latin.
You can get off with a murder. Well, Secret History, yeah. Mm. Not yours, the novel by Donna Tartt, which some people will know. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Mm. Mm, okay.
When that died out, I don't know.
We should bring it back.
Yes, that's right.
Mafia bosses learning Latin to...
That's right.
Well, there's that... in Black Books... they have to teach the mafia boss to read.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a brilliant one. That's right. So we've got our Sumner. That has a fear-red cherubina's face. His face is fiery red like a cherubin, because cherubins are high order of angels, of course, and they have red faces in medieval art.
Okay.
I suppose it suggests, I don't know, purity or something. I mean, red is the colour of blood and life and so on. But his face is red because he's sorcerer. For a sorcerer he was with Ian Narwe. So to be sorcerer is to have a red complexion with pustules and blisters and unpleasant stuff like that all over it. Inflamed skin. So it suggests... some sort of disease, and of course, you know, in a sense, the inner and the outer man are connected, so it's also kind of maybe a moral disease.
Yeah, because he's getting off on calling these people to be socially shamed. Is that kind of the point?
No. Well, I mean, there's no evidence that he's getting off on it, but he is exploiting it, because pretty obviously. Look,
people would bribe.
I don't have to tell the Archdeacon that you were shagging your brother in the, you know, last Tuesday.
And I mean, you could use it for everything. You could get a shag out of it. You could get money, power. Oh, my daughter needs a job.
Exactly.
You know, she needs a husband. Yeah.
Exactly.
You could use it for everything. And the thing is, it didn't even have to be true what you were accusing people of.
No.
But you had that position. Yeah, this is hugely corrupt.
Hugely corrupt. I mean, you'd have to be a saint not to be corrupted by this process.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Even if you're using it for, you know, fairly wholesome purposes, corruption, it's still corruption.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hmm.
I mean, it would be like... you know, you being an NKVD officer in Stalin's Russia, you know, I could dob you in for critical thought about critical speech of Stalin, or you could, you know, slide me a packet of rubles,
yeah,
and let me sleep with your sister.
Some American music,
yeah. Yes, right.
Yeah, some Levi jeans.
Yes, yes. American cigarettes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's kind of depressing, isn't it? But he's making the point that this is everybody will lead to corruption. It's just human. It's not that these are special cases. Although,
it's clear, just
that
humanity. Some,
yeah, it's just humanity.
Press go, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly, exactly. As hot he was and lecherous as a sparrow. Sparrows were notorious...
Well, really?
Oh, yeah, sparrows.
Sparrows?
Were, yeah.
Horny?
Yeah.
Good on it.
Mm. Well, remember King Lear?
No.
The wren goes to it, and a small gilded fly doth lecher in my sight. Let copulation thrive.
Huh. Yeah, I never thought of
that. Yeah, so little birds, wrens, sparrows, always at it.
Do we... Sure, that's not what we need to spend time on.
Well, we think of rabbits, don't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
So
yeah.
I suppose so.
Okay.
But not bilbies.
Well, we don't see many bilbies.
No.
But you always see baby rabbits.
You do.
The point.
You
yeah.
do. But I mean, that means rabbits are appropriate for Easter, new life.
Yeah.
Bilbies, less so.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, Australian.
Well, I suppose bilbies must reproduce, you know.
Yeah, we hope.
Unless they just grow.
I fear they're endangered, so.
With scarlet brewer's black and peeled beard. He looks rather piratical, doesn't he? He's got scabrous beard. And a beard is kind of rough and thick, but a lot of it's fallen out, so it's patchy. So he's not a signally attractive...
No, this is a morally culpable creature.
Yes, yeah. and that
who is responsible for the moral culpability of the community.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly. That's the beautiful irony. Yes, and exactly. So that shows itself in the face, you know. So he may well be... whether they had... They had...
Physiognomy?
Sorry?
Is that what you...
No, you go. Oh, no. Oh, they had a physiognomy. Certainly they did, yes, because it's ancient Greek. But I'm thinking more of awareness of STDs or STIs.
The Neapolitan disease.
Yeah, well, you see, that's the whole point. Now, it's said to occur first in 1493 at the Siege of Naples.
That's it, yes.
Among the French army.
Yeah.
The Neapolitan burning. But clearly in Troilus and Chryside...
was around.
Well, not Troilus and Chryside, sorry, the Testament of Chryside by Henryson, because there Chryside is in older age a leprous beggar, but there's a suggestion that, you know, leprosity?
Yes.
Whatever
we
call it, is somehow kind of sexually transmitted. A punishment for her.
STDs were as old as time, right? It was just more that probably a new version of the virus or
syphilis
something came.
Syphilis was new. I'm not sure chlamydia was new or not.
Because apparently it posed quite a challenge for the church, because suddenly you had all these priests with syphilis. and then also people, and then
okay,
how do we
get on to syphilis? Well, because his appearance is clearly diseased, and that disease would be seen as morally produced in some sense, even just by kind of self-abuse of various kinds, like, you know, drunkenness or gluttony or whatever.
Yeah.
So your sin is written in your face. Of his visage, your children were afraid. It's a lovely little detail, isn't it?
Well, yeah. They're not afraid of what he can do. They're afraid of how he looks.
Yes. Then as quicksilver, litage, ne brimstone, boras cirrus, ne oil of tatranon. So all these possible cures. Quicksilver is mercury, of course. Litage is white lead, whatever the hell that is. It sounds ghastly, doesn't it? It sounds like the kind of thing that women used to get a pale complexion. Of course, lead is not a good thing to...
Oh, lead monoxide. Okay.
Yeah. Not,
yeah.
Doesn't sound good, does it?
No, I wouldn't put it on... I don't... Yeah, no.
You wouldn't smear it anywhere.
Not tested on animals or anything.
No. Brimstone. Brimstone is sulfur, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's associated with hell. Fire and brimstone. Brimstone. So, again, another little glimpse of hell. It's clever, isn't it? Remember, there's a class of people in the eighth circle of hell that are in hell before they're dead. Their bodies are inhabited by demons, and they've already gone to hell.
Yeah. Clever. Maybe that's this.
Maybe.
The bureaucratic class. The corrupt bureaucratic class.
Yes. Yes. An ointment that would cleanse and beat. Any ointment that would clean and bite, you know, get rid of all the nasty stuff. That him nicht helpen of his welkes wheat. It would help him with his white, pus-filled pimples, boils. It's all very attractive, isn't
sexy.
It?
Sexy.
Yes, I know.
How would you make a a Hinge profile for this fella.
Well, he'd be a bit rough, wouldn't he?
You'd need a really big fish for him to hold over his face.
None of the knobbers sitting on his jack as knobbers.
It's a good word.
Of course, pimples. Well, Loverty, and then we get maybe some of the reasons. Well, Loverty, garlic, onions, and eat lakers, and for to drink on strong ween red as blood.
Yeah.
It's a great, great line, that. Strong ween. Those two powerful stresses coming together. Red as blood. Then would he speak and cry as he were wood. He'd speak and cry as if he were mad. And one that he had drunk and had the ween, then would he speak and no word but Latin.
I guess.
Except it's nonsense Latin, of course. It's just stuff he's picked up, you know. He can't actually speak Latin.
Okay.
But if you attend ecclesiastical court every day, you're bound to pick up a bit of Latin.
Yeah.
Lots of these people have scraps of Latin they use in magical ways.
Yes.
Like the friar, so pleasant was his in principio.
Huh. Yeah, okay.
Which, of course, is the beginning of St. John's Gospel.
Yes.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. Here we are, yes, in fact, that's what he says. A few times had a two or three that he had learned out of some decree. The wonder is he had it all the die. And eke ye canoe and well who that abjai and can clap and what as well as can the Pope. So he hears these bits of Latin and he can reproduce them, and it's no wonder, because a jay is a kind of bird that people keep as a sort of pet.
That repeats what you say.
Yeah, can call what, which is... What is a name? Like what Tyler, remember the Peasants' Revolt?
Yeah.
Mm. So it's kind of short for Walter.
Okay.
As well as can the Pope.
Yeah, that's good. Yes.
But also could in all the thing him grope. So if you try to sort of gauge him in other matters, there too had he spent all his philosophy. I quistio quid iuris world he free. The question of law which applies here, more or less, is what that means, quistio quid iuris of the law.
Hmm.
World he free. He was a gentle harlot and a kind. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Gentle. It's already, you see how it's, gentle, of course, originally means highborn.
Mm.
Gens means your family, your race, literally, but race not in our modern sense, but in that sense of descendancy. But it's already beginning to use as a term of general approval. So he was a good fellow. He was a good fellow. You know.
Ah.
But obviously, Jeff means it literally, Chaucer means it. Ironically. Mm.
Jeff V. Chaucer again.
A gentle harlot and a kind. Harlot is just a sort of, well, a bit of a naughty one, a bit of a rogue.
Okay.
But he's a kind of, he's a good-natured rogue, you know.
Hmm.
If that makes sense. And a kind. And again, that word kind is being used in something of our modern sense. Kind. A better fellow, not to men of... Schulden men nocht finde. He couldn't find a better fellow. So he's going to explain why. He wulde suffre for a quart of ween, a good fellow to have his concubine. So.
12 a month.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So if you give him 2 pints of wine, he'll look the other way at your concubine.
Yes.
Mm. Which good. Is a nice way of saying.
Bribe.
Oh, I see. Corrupt. Well, I think concubine was a nice way of saying, because it's rather an elevated word, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right, yes. Yeah.
I was speaking yesterday to my concubine.
I mean, yeah, you wouldn't say your whore or your... Yes. Your prostitute, hooker.
Well...
Sex worker.
Well, it suggests a... more than entirely temporary relationship that is not technically matrimonial.
Yeah, that's interesting, because there's probably also men being like, no, she likes me. You know,
yes.
Rather than,
yes,
I pay and I have my women brought in. No, she likes being brought in. It's the concubine thing. Yeah,
yes, interesting. Yes. Literally, concubine just lie with. Concubine.
Huh.
So, a 12-month and excuse him at a full. So he can have his concubine for 12 months and nothing, no worries, no problem. And then, of course, you probably have to pay another quart of wine for the next 12 months. Full privily of finje could he pull. That is clearly a kind of colloquial saying. It could mean to cheat a person, to pluck the finch of its feathers, but I think it just means, you know, to have it away with someone, basically, is probably what it means.
Yeah.
You come across these expressions, and it sort of makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, they're not preserved outside, say, a piece of verse, and so...
Mm.
You know, because most writing in this period is kind of solemn and isn't going to use slang in this way, so we sometimes have to guess at what the slang means.
Hmm.
It's like there's a poem by Catullus where he's lamenting the fact that Lesbia has left him. It begins, Caeli lesbia illa lesbia nostra, illa lesbia quam Catullus unam plus quam se atque sus amavit omnes, and so on. And it ends up, nunc in quadriviis et angiportis, now at crossroads and in corners, glubit magnanimi remi nepotes. She glubereis the great-souled nephews of Remus, founder of Rome.
Mm.
What does that mean?
What's glubere?
if you go to the Latin Catullus, it's quite funny, the standard Oxford Standard Authors Catullus, you'll find there's a footnote, learned footnote, and the editor points out that glubere means to rub the husk off an ear of corn.
Ah!
Exactly!
Just say what it is, you
exactly.
know?
But the point is, the editor is a bit flummoxed, is what she's doing to them exactly is not clear. Is she perhaps stripping them of their valuables? It's so sweet. I mean,
oh, bless. That's very funny. Beautiful. The world, it's just a history of dick jokes.
That's right.
Right back.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's a wonderful innocence, isn't it?
Do you think it was actual innocence or pretend innocence?
Well,
then the reader would figure it out.
That's
English
possible,
innocence.
I suppose it's possible.
Oh, that's funny.
But I think in that case you just wouldn't translate it, or you'd point out it meant rub nothing with it, and you wouldn't take it any further, like offering a kind of a crazy idea that she's somehow mugging them. Anyway. Where were we? Oh, yes. And if we found Ochwer a good fellow, this word good fellow, it's getting more and more sus every time it's mentioned, isn't it? A good fellow.
Yeah.
But we still use words like that, don't we?
But we can mean it ironically and not, and it's often just tone that gives it away.
Yes,
isn't
exactly.
It? Yeah, and Gracian implicature as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. And of course, in mafia parts, a good fellow is a mafioso.
Hmm.
There's a film called Goodfellas. Goodfellas? Is it? Martin Scorsese? Robert De Niro?
Recent.
Well, I wouldn't say recent, 90s.
Oh, well, I would. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
fair.
I probably would say.
The Goodfellas. Yeah, 1990. Bang on.
Oh, well done.
With, yeah, Joe Pesci.
It's a very good film.
Huh.
You should watch it.
I might have, like, I probably saw it while I was being raised.
Probably.
Kind of like how I know all the first half of Rambo off by heart.
Oh, right. Oh.
Don't mean to. Would like to purge it.
What a shame.
I know.
it's taking up room that, you know, could be taken up by Chaucer. Or
and Hamlet, if you could choose,
yes, exactly,
gone.
So if he does find a good chap like that, he will teach him to have no word, switch a castle of the etcher deaconess curse. He would teach him to have no worries about the archdeacon's curse. Curse means excommunication, of course, and I suppose it was the ultimate sanction that the archdeacon had.
Wow.
If you took it seriously. Well, yeah, if you took it seriously.
The archdeacon could excommunicate you?
Yeah.
Not. I thought the Pope...
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's lots of people can excommunicate you.
That's rough. I'm just saying there's a lot of room for error and petty quarrels and
that's right, yes,
corruption.
Exactly. Corruption again. And how seriously people took this. Some would, some wouldn't.
It's just one guy, you know?
Well, it's all right. You can imagine, you know, people saying, I care not a fart for your curse. And this is what the summoner is saying. Don't worry about that. It's nonsense, really.
And it was these, obviously, you know, you think of, oh my God. The Reformation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know the dot points of what caused it, but then you start to peer and you peel back the layers and you can really see how people would become frustrated with generations and generations of this power structure sort of thing. Why do you get any say in what happens to my soul?
Yeah.
Why am I excommunicated? Because it is. It's just one guy.
Exactly.
It's just Jerry.
Exactly. You
know? Okay, carry on.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So, in fact, you know, there's a lot of rather sort of bolshy rebelliousness in all these characters, isn't there, in a way?
Mm.
You know, we are round about the time of... this was written, in fact, not long after the Peasants' Revolt.
Mm,
1381.
Okay.
And the Peasants' Revolt, it wasn't just, you know, grumbling.
No, it was big. They took the Tower of London, didn't they?
Oh, they did. And they chopped off the head of the Archbishop. And,
yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, poll tax.
Poll tax. It was a poll tax that kicked it off.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is obviously unjust. You know, why should Lord Fauntleroy pay the same amount of money as you, a peasant?
Yeah, well, yeah.
In fact, it was a poll tax that brought down Margaret Thatcher in the late 1980s. So. People never learn, do they?
No. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's like a flat tax in modern parlance. It's what people like, you know, Scott Morrison would like.
Hmm.
He says with distaste.
Yeah, well, yes. But it almost happens now, and like big companies and Gina Reinhart pay no tax, and we pay a shit ton of tax.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the point I was going to make is that... Oh, is that there were genuine, what you might call ideological questions raised by this. Attached to the... You know, one of the leaders was a man called John Ball, who was a priest.
Yeah.
And of course, he was a Wycliffeite.
Ah, yes.
So a proto-Protestant.
Produced the first English translation of the Bible before Tyndale.
Wycliffe's students did, yes, yeah. That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
He didn't write it himself.
No. But after he went, yeah.
Yeah. And John Ball had a little rhyme: "When Adam delved and Eve span, who was then the gentleman?" So the idea that class distinctions are somehow inherent and biologically necessary and given by God doesn't make any sense if we all came from the same two people.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, how many peasants would have started thinking, hello?
Well, exactly.
And so, in fact, one of their prime motives and in their demands and their petitions was the abolition of nobility. And bishops and things.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do it now.
They were fine with the king, because the king is sacrosanct, put there by God. Yeah. They were happy with that. But Lord, you know, Pissbed,
yeah.
You know, why the hell should he loll around drinking wine while I'm...
toiling in the fields.
Yes.
And having my money stolen by, you know, by the miller.
Yeah.
And being called up by the summer. Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
I'm with them.
Exactly. So this is just a few years after all that. You can see there's a lot of kind of... simmering rebelliousness in these characters, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which is actually fascinating, I think.
Huh. because obviously it was put down quite violently.
Well, yes and no. I mean, it was actually, what happened was that Richard, who was only, King Richard, who was only 14 at the time.
Jesus.
He very bravely, I think. Either that or he was just kind of madly narcissistic and thought he was invulnerable. But whatever. He went up to the mob once Wat Tyler had been killed, their leader. He went up and said, I will be your leader. I will lead you, you know, and I will grant all your requirements and so on. I will be your king, your leader. And they all went home. They dispersed amicably. Very little bloodshed after that, and it was all over. So it wasn't...
Had I missed that? Or have I been told and forgotten?
I don't know. But...
Then he did nothing.
Oh, no, on the contrary. Then he started, once everyone had gone home, a savagely vindictive reprisal against almost everybody who was any kind of leader in this revolt. So it was, you know, a bloody business. But it was after the thing was over. It wasn't a fair fight. It wasn't bringing in soldiers.
Well, the rules of war are,
Yeah. So, yeah, not greatly to his credit. He was a bit of a monster, Richard II, frankly.
Okay.
Shakespeare gilds him a bit. I mean, of the two, I would much rather be under Richard III than Richard II.
Absolutely. Mm.
He used to hold Parliament in the open air with archers all round. So that, you know, this makes Franco's Parliament, or you know, the Soviet Supreme whatever.
Yeah.
Quite democratic, you know.
So if you spoke against the king,
yeah.
Arrow in your butt, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, if you were lucky.
Lucky. Oh yeah, he was a monster. But this also happened when you take a 10-year-old boy and say, you're God now. You know?
10-year-old boys.
What do you think's gonna happen?
Not known for their magnanimity,
no.
As you learnt on your trip to the NGV the other
That's
day.
Right.
I mean, he'd be about 10, wouldn't he?
Oh yeah, about that.
Yeah, bless. Can you imagine?
Exactly.
I'll take this out.
But that's the thing. And they say Richard II is a play. It's not about Richard as tyrant exactly, although of course it's there.
Yeah.
It's about what happens to a human being
when
you tell
them power
from at that age too, and you say, you know, you're invulnerable, you're magically powerful, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, human beings are human beings.
Mm.
Who
and
could
boys,
survive that?
Boys
yes.
will be boys.
They will be boys. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, King Lear is the same person in a sense at the age of 80, having all his life been treated in the same way.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm.
And yeah,
so it's
not just that they're a man.
No.
It's complicated.
Oh yeah, yeah.
This is what I was saying about Henry VIII. Everyone just wants to see him as this great misogynist, and it's like, well, yeah, I'm sure, but it's more complicated. It's politics and it's power and there's religion and there's a reason he had these six wives.
Well, that's right. Oh yes, it's quite complicated.
Yeah.
But also yes, power
corrupts.
Mm.
Yeah.
And absolute power corrupts absolutely, as Lord Acton famously said.
I like that.
Mm.
Hmm. Okay. We're doing well today. We smashed through a lot. We've got 10 minutes still.
10 minutes. Oh, we might not. We might have to leave the party then, mightn't
right.
we? But never mind. We'll carry on. So he'd teach him not to be afraid of the archdeacon's curses, excommunication, unless a man's soul were in his purse. But if a man's soul were in his purse, for in his purse he shall be punished be, because you know all the archdeacon practically is going to do is fine you. He might commute your standing at the church porch, you know, in a white sheet to a fine.
Okay.
Which is, you'd probably rather pay that, wouldn't you, if you were the local fishmonger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want the social shaming. You could make it all go away.
Yeah, just pay a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Wow. Money runs everything in this society.
Well,
Whatever. That's right. Purse is the archdeacon's hell, said he. Purse is the archdeacon's hell, said he. But when he wot he leered richt in dead. Now here's Jeff asserting himself. But when he wot he leered richt in dead. But I know he was lying, absolutely, and you know, truly. Of cursing oft each guilty man in dread, for curse will slay richt as a soiling slaveth. So of cursing, that is to say, excommunication, every guilty man should fear it, for excommunication will slay, will kill the soul, right as a soiling sarvath, as, you know, the whole process of penance and absolution and so on, saves.
Okay.
And also vadam of a significavit, which is rather bathos. Because what it is the first, it's the first line of the decree that orders somebody to be imprisoned by the civil authorities.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've come down from hell and to being imprisoned. And you can tell that's Jeff talking, because he's not making any kind of sensible distinction.
And he doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand.
That your soul will still go to hell
yes,
as well.
Exactly.
You
know. Exactly. So it's a nice touch.
You can see the rebellion. You can see this, that these people, the unreliable narrator, you can see that these people don't understand the implications for their soul, their mortal soul.
No, exactly.
So many layers at work.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So that you've got a very subtle superstructure of theological thought.
Yeah.
And then people who just kind of glimpse words and grasp phrases of Latin and really haven't got much of a clue. And crucially, don't distinguish forgiveness from pardon.
Yeah.
Only forgiveness can save you from hell.
Yeah.
Pardon just lets you off a bit of...
Yeah, and forgiveness has to come from...
from Christ.
Yes, and it's really hard to get a direct line.
Yes.
So it's... and then we get the rise of Protestantism.
Yeah, exactly.
Which gets you that direct line.
Yes, exactly.
Through you rather than some other third party who also would like a little bit of something.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
I can see how it happened.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It makes lots of sense.
Yeah.
Lots of sense.
Okay.
And it gets rid of all this corrupt... because this is the whole point. The point he's making again and again and again is not just this superstructure of officials between you and God, but the profound corruption that it almost inevitably produces.
Mm. Yeah, inevitably.
You know.
It wouldn't have mattered if it was, I don't know, lizard people ruling. It, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, you know, the picture of the parson is idealized. I mean, it's kind of credible, but you can see he's very much one of a kind. You know, he doesn't curse for his tithes, for example. He doesn't threaten like excommunication if you don't cough up your 10%.
Mm.
Particularly if, you know, the harvest was bad this year. Mm. He looks after people. He's the man of Ross. But what he's saying is that there may be heroic exceptions, but the system simply made it too easy to be corrupt. And our last one is the most corrupt.
Yeah.
Of all.
Well, I mean, Dante reserves a special place in hell for this one.
That's right.
So I might...
well, just the last three lines of that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
In Don Jehadia is going, these are the younger girls of the diocese. In Donja, meaning in his power, he had the young girls of the diocese at his own will and knew their counsel and all their advice and was all the, and was their sole advisor. So in other words, you know, one doesn't need to paint a picture here.
Yeah.
They're basically, because he's the authority figure here, so the opportunities for corruption here are even more sinister and unpleasant. Chaucer doesn't, you know, let's just work it out ourselves.
Well, yeah.
Oh, and finally, sorry, a guerdon had he set upon his head. Again, we often end with how they're dressed or what they're wearing, don't we?
Randomly.
Yes. So he's got a guerdon on his head, I think because he's been drinking, you know, as great as it were for an alastair. So as big as, this is what you have to show you an alehouse. You put a pole sticking out. You know the old barbershop sign?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like that. But it's got a garland on it.
Okay.
So it says, here be good ale, you know, essentially. A buckler had him made him of a cark. So he made a shield of a flat bread. So he basically is clowning around, you know, being drunk and a round flat loaf of bread. I suppose you could see an allusion to the Eucharist there, but I doubt it. I don't know.
Okay.
Well,
that's the only thing I could think of. I'm like, bread, Eucharist?
Yeah, look, the interesting thing about Jeff's details is that sometimes they are random. And they're there to convince us that this is a random person looking at stuff and not understanding it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, the cook. You know, the cook has that open wound on his shin that won't heal up.
Hmm.
Which is unpleasant for a cook, but I'm worse on his arm, I would think, you know, dripping in the soup. Or...
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that it means anything.
So we only have the partner left, I think.
We only have the partner left, yes. And the partner is...
He gets a lot.
He does, because he's the most complex and sinister.
Oh, I'm excited.
And, oh, he's...
Okay. Well, I might split these and have this as the second last, and the partner is the last on its own. I can name it the partner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the partner. And I tell you what, then we could do the partner's tale.
Yeah.
Partner's prologue and tale.
Yeah, and then that's Faustus.
And then Faustus. We have a plan.
And then Macbeth.
And Macbeth. Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, all right.
Right.
Go team.
It's...